Chapter 2. Paul Hubble Confesses. Finley left me in the interview room and locked the door. He came back later with Baker.
"We don't know who you killed," Baker said. "He had no ID. White, maybe 40, very tall, shaved head. He died between 11:30 p.m. and 1 a.m. You shot him twice in the head. Then you went crazy and kicked him again and again. After that, you tried to hide the body. The warehouse gateman found it at 8 a.m., saw you, and phoned the police."
Finley showed me a small corner of paper. It said Pluribus, and there was a telephone number below it.
"Where was this?" I asked.
"In the dead man's shoe," Finley replied.
"It's obvious that there were three men," I said. "One man was the killer. He's calm, doesn't get excited. Then there was a crazy guy who kicked the body. Last, there was someone stupid who couldn't hide it. Which one of these three am I? And why did I wait 8 hours in the rain before walking away?"
"I don't know," said Finley.
"You need to know whose telephone number this is, right?" I said, looking at the corner of paper. "So call it." Finley gave Baker a look that said, "Why didn't we think of that?" He called the number, saying he was from the phone company.
"He's here in Margrave," Finley said to Baker as he put down the phone. "Paul Hubble, 25 Beckman Drive."
"I know him," said Baker. "He's a banker, a family man, and a friend of Stevenson's."
"Bring this Hubble guy in," Finley ordered Baker. Baker locked me in a police cell and went to get Paul Hubble. Through the bars of the cell, I could see the office area. I sat in a corner, against the wall, and waited. I was playing a song in my head when Roscoe appeared, holding a cup.
"Want a coffee?"
she said, passing the cup through the bars.
"Thanks," I said, and she smiled. She had really beautiful eyes.
"If you're bringing me coffee, you don't think I shot anyone," I said.
"Well, you haven't done anything very bad in the past," she said, "because there's no match with your fingerprints yet."
I watched her walk to her desk and sit down. I stared at the back of her head and smiled. I liked her. Half an hour later, Baker came back with a man in his early 30s. Paul Hubble looked rich. He had expensive clothes, very white teeth, glasses, and a big Rolex watch. But I know what a worried man looks like from my years in the military police, and Hubble was a very worried man. Baker took Hubble to the interview room, and Finley followed. I sat and waited. Roscoe worked at a desk. I watched the minutes on the office clock go by slowly. Suddenly, just before 5 p.m., I heard shouting. Chief Morrison hurried to the interview room with Stevenson. Then Baker brought Hubble out. Hubble looked like a different guy. His face was gray, and he looked smaller. Behind his glasses, his eyes were frightened.
Baker locked him into the cell next to mine and went back to the interview room. After a while, I heard loud voices again. Stevenson came out, looking angry, followed by Chief Morrison. They went out to the street together. Then, Baker came to my cell, unlocked the door, and took me to the interview room. Finley was at the desk, looking worried. "We have a problem, Mr. Richa," he said. "Listen to this. I asked Hubble, do you know a guy called Jack Richa? He doesn't. He looks calm. Then I ask him, do you know a tall guy with a shaved head? He jumps. Next I say, the man with the shaved head has been shot. He almost falls off the chair. I tell him about the piece of paper with pluribus and his phone number on it. By then, he has trouble breathing. Who is the guy with the shaved head? I ask him. He doesn't answer. He doesn't say a word for 40 minutes. Then he jumps up and screams, I confess, I did it. I shot him. I was sure that Hubble didn't shoot anyone. Guys who shoot someone twice in the head are cold and calm. They don't jump around. But I just smiled at Finley. So, I can go now, right? I said. Wrong, said Finley. I don't believe him. He was at a party until 2 a.m. Lots of people saw him. He got a ride home from his sister's husband's brother, Officer Stevenson. But he's confessed, and I have to lock you both up for now. I stared at Finley. He was intelligent and good at his job. And he was sending two men to prison, knowing that they didn't do anything. Sorry, Richa, he said. It's Chief Morrison's orders. He says that you did the shooting for Hubble and were going to Hubble's to get paid when you were arrested. Now, I was worried. Chief Morrison was dangerous. Things didn't look good for me. We'll send you and Hubble to Warburton Jail. It's not a nice place, but you'll be in the holding cells. They're not so bad. I'll work on it over the weekend, and I'll ask Roscoe to help too. She's good. The best we've got. If what you say is true, you'll be out on Monday. And we'll know something about who really did this. That's the wrong place to start, I said. First, you need to know who the dead guy was. How? When he has no face, no ID, and we have no match with his fingerprints. Get Roscoe to check his fingerprints again, I told him. Then, Baker came in with Hubble and handcuffed us together. The prison bus is here, he said. The bus drove north, past Eno's Diner. The sun was going down above the red fields. After about an hour, we passed one small wood, alone in miles and miles of flat fields. Then, I saw the jail up ahead, with a high fence round it. We were taken out of the bus and waited with a guard. You'll be okay, the guard said. You'll have a nice room at the top, where the holding cells are. It's not so bad up there. Spivey will come and get you. At 10 p.m., a short man with a red face and small eyes arrived.
Which one of you is Hubble?
Spivey asked. Hubble put up his hand like a boy in school. Spivey waved a gun at us and took us to our cell. It was very dark, but I could just see two beds, one on top of the other. I lay down and tried to sleep, thinking of another world, where I was on a beach in Jamaica with Officer Roscoe.